Good evening, everybody. I'm Roger Walker. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, how are you, Roger?
Thank you, James. I love you, brother. And thanks to Into Action Group for asking our group to take this month. Very grateful to be here and do this. When I signed up for this, you know, I've been speaker before at various locations, so I didn't really give it a whole lot of thought up till a couple days before I got here. Then I started going through my mind and everything. What am I going to say? Who's going to take it this way? Who's going to take it that way? Who's going to take it this? And then it's amazing how my higher power just puts me where I need to be to hear what I need to hear. So I get up this morning doing what I normally do, my prayers, and I open up the daily reflection, and it says, suit up and show up. And I'm like, holy crap. You know, it's just little signs like that, like, get out of your head, suit up, and show up. And here I am. So a little bit about me, you know, sobriety date, January 12th, 2015. Drank for, 30-some years, approximately. I was told, you know, way back when that my first drink was when I was 2.5. I was sitting on my dad's lap watching NASCAR wrestling or some crap that he watched back then. And he had a PBR beside him, just cracked it open. Well, he gets up, he goes to the kitchen and comes back and half the beer's gone. And I've just got a smile on my face. Now, I don't remember this first drink, but what I do remember is like just about every family gathering we had from then on, you know, people would talk about how funny Roger was when he drank beer and everything. I'm like, all right, I'll, you know, put that one away. And that just kind of followed on with me. You know, I took my actual first drink, I guess when I was about 13 or 14. High school, you know, snow days, stuff like that. You know, small town, had a graduating class of 99. So it was a small town and we were bored a lot. So we got into trouble a lot. And most of it dealt with alcohol. And like I said, party after party after party, and I loved the attention. You know, you set up, you know, there's a trend in alcoholics, you know, where we just didn't fit in, or I just didn't fit in. I was a chameleon. I fit in with anyone I was around when I was drinking. I just didn't fit in with myself. I didn't know who I was. You know, I drank for so long with so many people, I would fit in with the country guys, if I was hanging out with the country guys. I would fit in with the punk rockers if I was drinking with the punk rockers. I would fit in with the jocks. I mean, I played sports. I could fit in with anybody if I was drinking. It's when I wasn't drinking that I was the most uncomfortable son of a gun on the planet. So I kept drinking. And it carried me through. You know, I went through high school and all, and I always thought, you know, I had good grades and everything. And it wasn't until I just visited home recently and I was going through some old boxes and everything, I come across my senior report cards. Can't believe my mom kept that crap. But I'm looking through them and everything, and there's D's and F's and everything. So even back then, I had this grandiose idea of how good I really was when I was just stupid. I mean barely scratching by because of alcohol. You know, alcohol put this idea in my head that, you know, you're doing great, it's all good, but no, it is far from reality. So far from reality that college was out of the question. You know, with those grades, yeah, I'm not going. I might get into community college, but that wasn't happening. So I did the next best thing. I went into the Navy. My dad was in the Navy, and he did reserves for a long time. And I'm like, okay, I'll make the excuse. I'll follow dad's footsteps. You know, college isn't going to happen, and I don't want to stay here. So I went into the Navy, and I got to say I was in the Navy, 24 years? And I got to say I drank alcoholically for 24 years. Went in, and they sent me to Great Lakes for boot camp. You'll hear a lot of the Navy in my story because it was a lot of my drinking time. And alcohol pretty much played a decision in every move I made in the Navy. Went to Great Lakes, cold as hell, January through March, never saw grass. And got out of there and they said, well, what do you want to do? I'm like, I want to do something with electronics. So they sent me to Orlando, Florida. I'm like, yeah, you know, 18 years old, going to Orlando, you know, and basically stayed drunk there. And the course I was doing there for an electronics technician, it was a self-paced course. It is horribly hard to self-pace yourself when you're hungover all the time. So I would go into class and they'd sit you basically in this little box with a computer here to go through these electronics courses, and I would sleep or read the newspaper and just was not doing very well at that course at all. And the Navy and I came to an understanding that, a mutual understanding that I just shouldn't do that course anymore. So they offered me another school, and I went in, like I said, after this decision, they had three choices. They're like, you can be a boiler technician. I'm like, no. And the next one, they're like, well, you can be an HT, a hull technician. I'm like, well, what's that? Like, they're firefighters and they weld. I'm like, no. And the next one they came to, well, you can be an operations specialist. I'm like, what's that? They're like, well, you work on radar and sit in the air conditioning all day long. I'm like, where's the school? They're like, Virginia Beach, Virginia. I'm like, sign me up, you know? So here I go, I mean, 18, 19, headed to Virginia Beach in the summertime. And what a horrible idea for the Navy to do that. Because, you know, so here I am, you know, in the dorm rooms, we're just tearing up crap. And then that goes on, go to my first ship, they're offering ships, and they send me back to Florida. I just don't know what they were thinking over and over again. You know, they sent me down to Jacksonville, Florida on a reserve frigate. Now, this has been a while back. So reserve frigates, all we did was drug operations in the Caribbean. So we didn't even deploy. When we deployed, it was mostly for a month and a half, 2 months at a time. So we hit island after island after island, just doing drug operations. And I have pictures of the islands we went to. I don't remember many of them. That, to this day, that's one of my biggest regrets in the military. You know, I've got tons of pictures and no memories. And that's all due to wonderful alcohol. But I was having fun. Oh my gosh, alcohol was so fun for so long. And then, you know, I finally reached my last duty station. I saw the decline of ships. I'm like, you know, I gotta find something new. I just don't want to do ships anymore. So I wound up at ACU-4, hovercraft. Now, when I got there, the ACU part actually stands for Assault Craft Unit. But when I checked in, they said, welcome to Alcohol Consumption Unit. And I'm like, once again, I have found my spot. And that's the way it was. We partied. We did things that we should not have done for the longest time. And I don't know how any of us kept a job there, quite honestly. And that went on for quite a while. And if you've ever heard the term that non-alcoholics change their drinking to meet their goals, but alcoholics change their goals to meet their drinking, that's what happened to me. I got to the point where I was pretty sure from my actions that I was never going to advance. I didn't want to deploy again. And I could see the writing on the wall. The drinking was getting worse and worse. And I was showing up hungover more and more. You know, used to have the thing, oh, I'm not gonna drink during the week, only on the weekends. Well, the weekend started to get to Thursday, then it started to get to Wednesday, then Tuesday. And I was just drinking all the time. So seeing the writing on the wall, I just decided to retire. I'm like, well, I'll show them. I'll just retire and I'll go home and drink. And that's what I did. I retired in 2012 and went home and steadily just dropped my butt in a recliner for a long time. Became a little bit of a lump in the family. Oh man. We talked about it last night. Alcohol had become my master. You know, there were lots of good times with alcohol. You know, it was fun for a long time. And then it just wasn't fun anymore. No matter how much I drank, no matter how much I poured down my throat, I could not find the happiness I had had in those early years, you know, of just partying and just having a good time. I loved the attention. You know, I loved the attention of drinking. I loved the attention of being the life of the party. Even when I became the joke of the party, I loved the attention. Or one of those snow day parties. It was one of my first drunks. I mean, and I pretty much drank to excess from the get-go. It wasn't like, oh, I have two or three beers and, well, that was good. Maybe I'll try a couple more next time. No. Once I started drinking, it was almost like a pressure cooker was released. And I could go, ah, you know, and I just kept going. I had that obsession and compulsion that we talk about pretty much from day one. And that's the way it went for the long time. No matter what I did, I couldn't stop. I tried to stop. Take that back. I attempted to stop until. I never really stopped with the intention of quitting. I stopped with the intention of getting my wife off my back, getting the doctors off my back, seeing the levels on my labs come back into normal. My wife is in the medical field, so throughout the time of knowing her, I've learned to read labs and know what certain things mean, and know that when bilirubins start to creep up, it's time for me to stop drinking, at least for a little while, you know, and we let those back off. Oh crap, my wife, I totally forgot my wife. I met her while I was in the Navy. She probably thinks that's a mistake. She swore up and down she'd never marry a sailor, and yet here we are 20 some years later, still married to her. I don't know how she kept up with me or why she put up with me, but she did. God bless her. It was always my saying, well, you knew what you were getting into. You know, she had no freaking clue what she was getting into. Because when she met me, the drinking was still somewhat controllable. I would get plastered now and then, but it was still somewhat controllable. And then it didn't, you know. It got to the point, especially after I retired, I got home. I couldn't blame it on anybody else. You know, we kind of surround ourselves with people who drink like us, so we don't look quite as bad. Little did I know, they weren't drinking like me. I surrounded myself with these people, and it was all in my head. They weren't drinking like me. I was just drunk and thinking they were drinking. I went to a buddy of mine's retirement party. We rolled hard when we were at the unit. And this was in sobriety. And I got to celebrate his 50th birthday. And of all places, he holds it at a VFW. So I'm like, come on, man. And I was like, what, 3-4 months into sobriety. And I'm talking to my sponsor, and he goes, as long as you have a good reason to be there, you're praying about it, you know, have an escape route, you can go to the party. Well, I got there, and all these guys that I'd hung out with that I thought were just as big a drunks as me, you know, one beer, two beers, it was just all in my head. I just thought everybody drank like me, and just my alcoholic brain. So anyway, back to retirement. I sit there, basically plotted down in the recliner. You know, I was able to take care of the kids. I became the stay-at-home dad. I was able to, I guess, a functioning alcoholic. You know, I got the kids up, I got them to school, I was able to pick them up whenever need be. I learned at one point, schools don't like it when you pick your kids up drunk. So, so I was able to squash that, at least until I got them home. And through many talking to's from the wife, you know, I'm like, okay, I cannot drink until you get home. And I was able to do that for a while. Now, when she walked in, there was a drink made on the counter, sitting there, waiting for her to crack the door handle open, because I just couldn't take it anymore. And as soon as she walked in, I started drinking. And I drank till I ran out or passed out. And that's kind of synonymous with the way my whole drinking career went. You know, run out or pass out. So, it got to a point where I knew there was a problem. I knew I drank too much. I was never convinced that I was an alcoholic. I wondered if I was an alcoholic. And that's another thing. You know, non-alcoholics never wonder if they're an alcoholic. But, you know, never really considered that that I was an alcoholic. I thought I had my TV image of what an alcoholic was. You know, the drunk pushing the cart under the bridge, you know, drinking a wine bottle out of a paper bag. That was my image of what an alcoholic was. All I had to do was look in the mirror. That's what it was. I could not not drink anymore. And it got to a point where I basically sat in front of my wife in tears saying, I have a problem. I have to stop. So I did what every alcoholic, well, not every alcoholic, I did what this alcoholic did. I cleared out my liquor cabinet. It was in Bill's story. Cleared out, made a solid resolve. It's gonna happen this time, and it lasted for 2.5 months, and it was the absolute most miserable 2.5 months of my life, because all I thought about was drinking. We kept a couple bottles of wine. See, this is the fun. This is the alcoholic part. We kept a couple bottles of wine, you know, just in case we have company. She kept a half a bottle of this foo-foo rum, because every once in like 4 months, she would like to fix a mojito. So I'm like, okay, because I don't drink that stuff, we can keep that there. 2.5 months, I would white-knuckled it. Like I said, miserable, because all I thought about was drinking. I had no defense against alcoholism. I had no higher power. I had nothing except my just poor willpower. And we were making, well, I was making spaghetti one night, and she wasn't home yet. You usually put wine in my spaghetti sauce. So I pour a little wine in my spaghetti sauce. Never even thought about it. That half bottle was gone. The other bottle we kept for visitors, that bottle went away. The half bottle of foo-foo rum went away, and I'm passed out on the sofa before she even hits the door. And no defense. I don't even know. I remember it happening, but I don't know why. You know, talk about Bill banging on the bar. How did it happen again? That was me. I have no idea how it happened. It just happened. No defense, no nothing. And I was woken up. Next morning, the alarm went off. You know, I got up. I could hardly stand up because, you know, it's a progressive disease. Just because you stop doesn't mean the disease stops. And man, it hit me hard. The next morning, I had the shakes. Thought I was going to pass out. And I was, God knows how I did it, but I was able to get the kids off to school, and I went back to bed. The phone rang around 10:30, and it was my wife. And I'm like, oh, fuck, here we go. So, you know, that dreaded day after phone call, do you know what you did in this net? And, but it wasn't that at all. It was her telling me what my 10-year-old son had said. He said, was Dad drunk again? And it wasn't so much that he said, what's Dad drunk? It was that he said, again. I thought I was all cool and hiding it and sneaking around and nobody knew anything. No, I wasn't hiding anything. If the dang 10-year-old could figure it out, I knew everybody else could figure it out. So my wife suggested Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm like, I don't know what that is. I mean, I've seen it on TV, but I have no idea what it is. And she goes, well, maybe you should give it a try. So here I was, the jumping off point. I'm in bed, I've disappointed my son, and you know, we talk about pride a lot in this program. You know, pride kept me drinking for that long because I thought I could handle it. My pride, I can handle this. And then my pride actually got me to Alcoholics Anonymous because the whole time I was drinking, my wife was like, if you keep drinking this way, you're gonna kill yourself. And after that phone call, I had the gun in my hand because the thought of my son being disappointed in me, and the way I was feeling that morning, it about took me. But my pride, I was not going to give her the satisfaction of being right. And that's just the way I am. So being the fine alcoholic, well, I'll do it tomorrow. But this time I did. I went into the rooms, and once again, that silly pride, you know, I pulled into the Magnolia group. It was, yeah, Tuesday afternoon down on Wilroy Road, back when they were back down there. There's a noon meeting. And I drove by the stairs, and son of a gun, if Christy wasn't standing on the stairs smoking a cigarette, and we made eye contact. I'm like, damn. You know, because if not, I would have kept on driving. But pride, I was not gonna let anybody call me a quitter or a drive-by. So I went in, and it was absolutely amazing. You know, she greeted me with a hug and said everything's gonna be all right, and took me in, introduced me to a couple people, and I found out that people drink coffee at noon, and that people eat lots of cookies and cakes at noon. I didn't know this existed. But yeah, just opened their arms and took me in. So, you know, part of doing this thing, you talk about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So the what it was like was, it was fun for a long time, and then it wasn't. It got really bad, and then we get to the what happened. So that's where we are. You know, my boy calls me out. I have an aha moment that, you know, I'm hurting somebody other than myself, because I didn't think that way for the longest time. I'm like, I don't know why everybody had a problem with me drinking. I'm not hurting anybody else. I'm just doing my thing. I'm keeping to myself. Why do you guys care what happens to me? You know, I'm not hurting y'all. I had no idea, you know, how much alcohol plays an effect on the family and the people around you. So that's what happened. I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I started following some suggestions. I went to the meeting. I did the 90 and 90, because that's what was suggested. those first couple meetings, you know, came into. They said 90 and 90. I'm like, man, I'll do what I got to do. Because at that point when I came in, I was done. You know, I tried it to stop many times. And the 2.5 month time, that was pretty much the last straw. You know, I was convinced I could not do this on my own. I wasn't crazy about a treatment program. So I walked in on my own. No court, no cops, just walked in the rooms. And through a couple meetings, you know, it was funny because, once again, you know how your higher power puts you where you need to be. There were a couple ex-military guys in these rooms, retired. And to hear their story, talking about, you know, the way they drink in the military and what happened after they retired, I'm like, maybe I'm not as unique as I thought I was, you know, because I started hearing my story told by this person and this person and this person and this person. And it wasn't the exact story, but it had more to do with why I drank and how I felt about drinking than what I drank. You know, when you first come in, at least me, when I came in, I like talk about, yeah, I drank this much and I drank this kind of bourbon. You know, I was a top shelf bourbon snob and I did this and this and then all these actions afterward. None of that means crap. You know, we all have actions after we drink. We all drink different things. I hate vodka. You know, some people love it, not me. But none of that mattered. It's what got me into these rooms. It's up here is what got me into these rooms. You know, the self-centeredness, the pride, the selfishness throughout my whole life, that's what got me into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I found that out by just sitting down, shutting up and listening, and hearing other people talk to me. And hearing my story just told time and time again. And then I followed the suggestions. I got a sponsor. I started working the steps. I got a home group. That's, what, 4 home groups ago. But I did what was suggested. And things started getting easier. A lot of people talk about life will just get better, you know. I don't prescribe to that thought. I think life gets easier. For me, life didn't change. The wife was still the wife. The kids were still the kids. Retirement was still retirement. And I still had to make breakfast and clean the freaking house. So life didn't really change that much for me. But it got easier. Because in working the steps, I learned how to deal with life on life's terms and not deal with life on alcohol's terms. I didn't need the blanket of drunkenness to get me through the day. I didn't need the haze of alcohol to make me figure out how to do things and how to deal with people. So moving through the steps, you know, did the 1, the 2, and then we got up to the 3rd, and I'm like, man, here's that God thing again. And I was never that much of a religious person. Like a lot of people my age, you know, parents drug you to church, and that's what happened to me. I was drugged to church until about 14-year-old, they just stopped fighting and said, okay, fine, just stay home. It's not worth the fight. So I did. And so, but even when I went to church, you know, it never really got that much out of it as far as religion, whatever. But as far as the spiritual part of the program, you know, I got into the program and I love how the book is written. Find a higher power of your own understanding. My higher power is mine, non-denominational. He's mine. You can have yours. Just don't mess with mine. And when I started praying, things started working. I didn't know how to pray. My sponsor says, just say thank you. Say thank you in the evening and help in the morning. And that's what I started off with. And I still do that today. I get up in the morning, of course, more prayers have evolved. You know, I get up in the morning, I say third step prayer, seventh step prayer. And I say, basically, help me to get through today, just one more day, relieved of the accession of alcohol. It worked today. Hopefully it'll work tomorrow. When I go to bed, I'm like, thanks. You know, it worked. So the prayers I said at the beginning, I still say today, because it kept me sober at the beginning, so I'm not going to stop it. You know, when I'm the kind of guy, I was always a show me kind of guy. You know, you want me to do something, show me. You want me to run this exercise, show me in the SOP where I have to do this. You know, show me in the instruction where it says I have to do it this way. You know, and my higher power showed me. And I got to the third step, and I was still a little iffy on the whole God thing. And I just happened to be taking my daughter out to swim lessons. She was doing swim lessons, Camp Arrowhead, way out 58. And we're driving through that little part of Suffolk and going around the turn. There's a big Victorian house that sits back off in the corner. And going around that turn, and my daughter and I are just gut laughing. I don't even know at what we were laughing about, but it was the first time I'd laughed like that in years. And we're just having a good time. And I kid you not, I felt basically a hand on my shoulder and something said, it's gonna be all right, I've got this. And that's when I turned it over, right there. Haven't thought about drinking ever since. Some people find their higher power, their spiritual experience through mechanics. I had what they call the burning bush moment. That was it. Something told me he's got it, and I'm like, cool. and it's just been that way ever since. So I got through the started doing the inventory. I prepared. Once again, I'm a binder boy. I like to prepare for everything. So I got my binders, I got my pens, I got my sheets, I got my highlighters, and I prepared for about 5 months to do my step four until I got just about crazy enough where I knew that if I didn't do this, I was gonna go drink again. And so I kicked myself in the butt, did the inventory, and believe it or not, it just really wasn't that hard. Once I actually put pen to paper, it just wasn't that hard. It started going, 13 pages later, I'm like, let's do five, come on. I was ready to get that crap gone. Cause I'd sit there and I looked on the paper and I could tell what an absolute jerk I had been for the past 35 years then. And no, 45, sorry, lost a decade there. My memory's going too. And so I got through five, and then, six, seven, eight. Then we get up to, the maintenance steps, spot check inventories and stuff. He knows I've done a spot check inventory in a PetSmart parking lot because I thought I was going to kill a carpet guy. Yeah, dude had wronged me, wronged my family, and I was swore I was going to run my truck right through his front window. But I had to sit down and do an inventory right there in the parking lot. Did it, put it on paper, prayed about it, called somebody about it, and then it was like, okay, let's go on about the day. And so, by the way, inventories work. And then we get into 11 and 12, what we're doing here tonight, to suit up and show up. You know, if you read the Daily Reflection, you know, the suit up and show up is as much a part of step one as it is step 12. You know, getting yourself ready and prepared to do the program of Alcoholics Anonymous every day. You wake up, like I said, I am what Al-Qaeda calls a soft target. You know, I am routine oriented. I wake up, turn the coffee on, take some meds, pray, read, take the dog out. You can set your clock by my routine in the morning. And if I get off that routine, the rest of my day suffers. and that goes into, you know, if I skip my prayers, if life gets in the way, because it does sometimes, I notice it throughout the day. And we're just so blessed that we can start our day over anytime we want to. You know, we can do the readings, we can do the prayers anytime we want to. And it helps to do that. So I suit up and show up every day. You know, I'm active in the home group. I've been active in just about every home group I had. I've had service structure, you know, intergroup rep, GSR rep, and all of these things keep me sober. It keeps me in tune with Alcoholics Anonymous. I sponsor people. I take phone calls. I make phone calls. And I have to do this program every single day because I've seen people, you know, with the 15, the 17, 6 months, you know, go back out and drink. And the majority of the time people go back out and drink, it has been my experience, that it's because they just stopped doing what they did at the beginning to stay sober. They stopped going to meetings or just slacked off. And I'm guilty. I've slacked off meetings, and I'll get to the point where I start to justify in my head, I got this. I don't need as many meetings as I think I do, you know? And that's when I have to double down and go to twice as many. Because I'm an alcoholic. I can talk myself into anything. I can justify anything. I can twist thoughts in my head to do whatever I want to do and make it right. And if that happens to be going out and getting another drink, then damn it, I'm going to go out and get another drink. But I don't want to get to the point where I can think that. And man, if my butt is in a chair at an AA meeting, I'm not thinking about going out and getting another drink. So I go to as many meetings as possible. I talk to alcoholics because it's hard to think about drinking when you're talking to a guy who's trying to recover from drinking. So I call people. And that's where we're at now, you know, what it's like now. Life is easier. You know, I'm able to deal with life on life's terms. My catchphrase is, I'm able to be present. I'm able to be present in today, not in that cloud of alcohol. I'm able to be a part of my family's life. My kids know, unless I'm in the hospital or broke down on the side of the road, if they call me and said, Dad, I need you to do this for me, they know it's going to get done because I'm not drunk. You know, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I will do what I say I'm going to do. I can be present. I can be present. I can be of service to my wife. I can be of service to my family and service to those around me. And that is a gift given to me by the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, my good friend over here, he talks about the debt. And giving back to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is a debt. This just wasn't handed to me. You know, I had to work a little bit, but people gave their time freely. They didn't get paid. They didn't get compensation from the home group president or anything for helping anybody out. No, you know, everybody gives their time, and in doing so, they stay sober. When I repay the debt, when I make these phone calls, take phone calls, work with sponsees, I'm repaying the debt of basically my life was given back to me. So I can't just take that and stick it in my back pocket and go on about my way. I have to do something with that. I have to work with these people. And what James said, you know, stick my hand out, welcome somebody into the new meeting. It's a debt that I owe the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I owe my higher power. My higher power got me here. My higher power got me sober. And, you know, by showing up to these meetings, taking speaking engagements, and just sharing at meetings or making a phone call, you never know what you say might save somebody's life. And that's for paying the debt. I've had people, Zoom meeting one time, real quick, it was a district Zoom meeting or something, and they were announcing the new Virginia chair positions or whatever. And I was on a district meeting, and a guy was down in the corner, and he heard the name of like the assistant district chair or whatever for Virginia. And he goes, holy, he's like, I know that guy. I need to talk to him because he said something one night that saved my life. And this was on a Zoom call. You know, I had no idea this was going to happen, but that's what happens in AA. You know, you just show up to a meeting one night and something you might hear might be just what you need to hear tonight to get you through tonight. Let's see, we're looking at 10 till. So the program has given me my life back. I'm very grateful. I can't say it enough. And I'm grateful that I get to do this every day. You know, wake up and I make a decision every day. Had a good friend one time, he talks about, it's funny, we were joking earlier that no one gets out of here alive. You know, we're all gonna die. Sorry. But he said, you know, if you're in this room right here, chances are you have the disease of alcoholism. And you have a decision to make every morning. Just like me, I have a decision to make every morning. Are you going to die with the disease, or are you going to die from the disease? So when I wake up in the morning, I make that decision. Yeah, go down. Turn the coffee on, bump it off, do some prayers, do some readings, make some phone calls. You know, I make the decision every morning, and I have to. And with that, I think I'll close. Thank you all for being here tonight. I appreciate it.